Now Monitor brings you Meet the Press, the prize-winning interview program produced by Lawrence Spivak. Four of America's top newsmen are ready for this spontaneous and unrehearsed conference. Here's the moderator of Meet the Press, Ned Brooks.
Welcome once again to Meet the Press. Our guest is Mr. Philip Noel Baker, member of the British Parliament and winner of this year's Nobel Peace Prize. He was given the award in recognition of his 45 years of campaigning for the cause of peace and disarmament. In the last year, he has visited Russia, where he discussed world problems with Soviet Premier Khrushchev and with other leaders of the communist world. Mr. Noel Baker participated in the founding of the League of Nations and the founding of the United Nations. He served as a delegate to both organizations. He is a member and former chairman of the British Labour Party. He served in the cabinet of Prime Minister Clement Attlee as the Minister of State in the Foreign Office. His most recent book is entitled The Arms Race, A Program for World Disarmament. And now seated around the press table, ready to interview Mr. Noel Baker, are Ernest K. Lindley of Newsweek magazine, Pauline Frederick of NBC News, Clifton Daniel of the New York Times, and Lawrence E. Spivak, our regular member of the Meet the Press panel. Now, Mr. Noel Baker, if you're ready, sir, we'll start the questions with Mr. Spivak.
Mr. Noel Baker, when you accepted your Nobel Peace Prize award, you said that you were sure that Mr. Khrushchev would agree to real disarmament. Now, what has Mr. Khrushchev done that would make you so sure?
Well, you can only judge by your own experience. I had very long talks with Mr. Khrushchev, and I've talked with the Russian delegates over the last 4 years. I think since 1955, they are ready for real disarmament, if with real control.
Would you risk the fate of the world on what Mr. Khrushchev and the Russian leaders have said?
Oh, no. Certainly not. I would negotiate with him, and I think if we negotiated, we should soon find out in a week if he meant business.
Well, now, what do you consider essential for security of the West in any disarmament agreement with the Soviet Union?
I think we need all-in control of everything from the nuclear plants down to the last military depot of rifles and small arms. And I believe, after talking with Khrushchev and his colleagues for a very long time on that, that he will agree to what we need.
Mr. Daniel.
Mr. Noel Baker, you say that you would negotiate with Khrushchev. Haven't we already been negotiating for quite some time with the Russians?
Well, I don't think the negotiations have been very satisfactory myself.
Well, of course they haven't, but you say we could find out in a week from Mr. Khrushchev whether he was serious or not. How would we go about finding out that? What would the test be?
Well, I would like us to put forward detailed, practical proposals in the form of treaty clauses of the armament reductions that we would make and the kind of control we want, and ask him to say yes or no against each clause or to propose amendments.
Well, from your long experience, 45 years of it, do you think negotiation is as simple as that? Do you just say yes or no and then break up in a week, or doesn't it take rather more time?
Oh, no, it would take a long time, but I think you would very soon find out if he sincerely wanted a treaty.
You feel right now that Mr. Khrushchev is ahead of us in his proposals for disarmament?
I wouldn't say that. The whole UN Assembly adopted a resolution that the question of general and complete disarmament is now the most important question before the world. And I hope that that's an accepted objective.
An accepted objective, I'm sure, but have we any confidence that this objective can be achieved when we are dealing with the Russians? Seems to many of us that the Russians have broken so many agreements, how can we be sure that they will keep the next one we make on disarmament?
Well, I think that the control system would give us guarantees which would enable us to find out before any danger developed, once we got the disarmament treaty agreed to.
Miss Frederick.
Mr. Noel Baker, the Russians appeared to have turned down our plans for detecting underground tests, plans that were talked about in Geneva. Is this the sign that they're ready for real disarmament?
Well, Miss Frederick, the Russians have always said that so long as it's only tests, they won't accept much inspection. If the arms race is going on and we're making new missile bases in Turkey, Germany, Britain, I don't know where, then they don't want foreigners going round in inspection parties all over Russia marking down the targets. That's their case. It may be right, it may be wrong. I personally think it's wrong. But that's their case.
Do you feel that in view of the deadlock now at Geneva that the United States and Britain should continue their voluntary test ban after the 31st of December?
Well, I hope everybody will stop testing.
But is it fair that we suspend our testing and not continue developing atomic weapons when we have no agreement with the Soviet Union?
Well, if they start testing, then of course we shall know it, as I think, very quickly, and then we should be free to start again, but I hope nobody will start.
Well, do you feel that the Soviet Union really wants to work out a test ban that is permanent and that will carry through completely without any further resumption of tests?
I think they do.
Mr. Lindley.
Mr. Noel Baker, you've said that you think Khrushchev was willing to accept a large measure of inspection and control. Yet in his speech to the United Nations General Assembly on September 18th, after accepting control in principle, he went on to raise several general qualifications. One of them was that the Soviet Union would never permit the organs of inspection to become the organs of intelligence, collecting intelligence. He also said that one of the surest ways to prevent disarmament, I'm paraphrasing this, was to make such large demands for inspection that some nations could not accept them. And the same points were made in the Soviet proposals submitted to the UN General Assembly at the same time, with the intimation that the Western demands for inspection were so unreasonable that they were an effort to prevent disarmament. Now, do you agree with Khrushchev on that?
Well, I would agree in this sense, that at certain points in the past, when we have not been proposing very much disarmament, we have put forward papers asking for a great deal of inspection. But all that Khrushchev said in the assembly was conditional on complete disarmament. And if he had complete disarmament, then as I read his speech, and certainly as I read the speeches made later by Mr. Kuznetsov, they said that they would have complete inspection.
Well, do you understand that to apply at all stages? That could be interpreted to mean that the inspection wouldn't be complete until disarmament was complete.
I didn't read it like that.
Yes.
And when I talked with Khrushchev last year, I was quite clear that if we were going towards a drastic disarmament, he was ready to accept at every stage all the inspection that was required.
Now, you said a minute ago, Mr. Noel Baker, that they didn't want inspectors running around in their country so long as we, the free world, had bases in Turkey and, I suppose, in Western Europe. Does that mean that we've got to dismantle the collective defenses of the free world in order to get a start on disarmament?
And not until the Russians are disarming. Not until they're dismantling their bases and their defenses.
You would agree that one of the foremost Soviet objectives is to dissolve the defensive alliances of the free world and to expel American armed force from the Eurasian continent and the islands near that continent.
Yes, but I think they understand perfectly well that there's no hope of that whatever, and nobody in our country would support it, until they are themselves also disarming at an equal rate and with the objective of very drastic disarmament indeed.
Mr. Spivak.
Mr. Noel Baker, don't you think that the arms race is the result of world tensions and not the cause of world tensions?
Well, Mr. Spivak, I should like to think that. I should like to think we could just settle Germany and Formosa and the other questions and then the arms would fade away. But I've been watching this since before the First World War. Lord Grey, our foreign minister, who made desperate efforts to prevent the First World War, said that the real cause of that First World War was the arms race. And I know I lived through it, at that time and again between the wars. It was the breakdown of the disarmament conference which took us back into power politics and made the Second World War.
And you think that if you got rid of all nuclear weapons and got rid of all conventional weapons except small arms, that this would end wars?
I do. I think war ought easily to be got rid of.
Well, you think then that with 900 million communists, with small arms, and the free world with small arms, that there would be no dangers, that the communists would overrun the free world?
I think there would be no danger, quite honestly. But if they attempted it, we should have all sorts of possible sanctions in our hands.
What sanctions would we have if we didn't have enough arms?
Well, we should have as much arms as they had. We've got 1,600,000 people. 1,600,000,000 people.
Well, then you would, in other words, you would still keep the world armed.
I would keep the small arms on our side that they have on their side.
No, and this would not be disarmament. This would not be disarmament then, because after all, well, if you have baseball bats, you still have a form of armament, haven't you?
Well, now, in 1952... the Western governments declared certain principles about disarmament. They said we ought to reduce to the point at which no state had enough armament to conduct aggressive war against its neighbors. I think, is an agreed objective.
I want to ask you one other question. If one nation had hidden a few nuclear weapons and the other nations had none, honestly disarmed, who would conquer the world, or who could conquer the world, regardless of what small arms the other nations had?
Well, of course, that's been the crux of the deadlock for the last 4 years. And in my view, you have a choice. Either you keep your stocks of nuclear weapons, and you let France and China and Germany and Japan and India and Pakistan make their nuclear weapons, and you can be perfectly certain that within 10 years from now there will be a dozen countries with nuclear weapons. Or else, you can abolish the nuclear weapons and abolish the means of delivery, the missiles and the aircraft by which they can be delivered, and reduce your other armaments to a point at which aggressive war would be too great a risk.
And you would be willing to take the risk that neither the communists nor the Russians would hide any nuclear weapons if we gave ours up?
I think you could make those weapons useless to them if you abolished the means of delivery. Because nobody can hide bombers or missiles. There's no problem of control. They can't be hidden in the factory. They can't be hidden when they're tested. You've got to train the troops in their use.
And you do away with all airplanes?
I would, all military airplanes.
Well, but they tell me that you can put a nuclear weapon in a suitcase and explode it. You don't need bombers.
Well, I'd like to see that. I don't believe it.
Mr. Daniel.
Mr. Noel Baker, essentially it seems to me that the program for disarmament you just outlined here parallels very closely the program that Mr. Khrushchev gave to the General Assembly of the United Nations. I think you call that proposal of Mr. Khrushchev's epoch-making. I'd like to know what is so sensational about it. It seems to me that it was presented as long ago as before 1939 at the League of Nations, was it not, by Mr. Litvinov?
Well, when Litvinov, I was there with Arthur Henderson, who was the president of the disarmament conference. Litvinov put up his first proposal more or less as a propaganda effort. But when President Hoover put forward his proposal of June 1932, Litvinov accepted that, and the conference came very near to success.
You said the Litvinov proposal before the war was a propaganda effort, but Khrushchev's is now not a propaganda effort?
Well, you see, the condition of the world has changed. If we could go down to the proposals of President Hoover's draft treaty of 1932, I would be quite satisfied. I think we should have peace. It was very drastic disarmament compared with the armaments we have today.
You are saying, in effect, that you'd be willing to take a small first step and not expect complete disarmament in any foreseeable future.
Well, it's got to be a big step. And I was saying that if we could get to Hoover's level, it would be a very big step. I don't believe in the partial measures which have been discussed in the last few years. I wish I did.
You would settle, however, for partial measures if, for example, at the summit conference that we are now about to have, presumably next April, the great powers were able to agree on some partial disarmament. Would you welcome that? Or?
Well, if it was real, if it was leading in the right direction, if it could be controlled. But the trouble about partial measures is that it's extraordinarily difficult to control them, because if you leave out part of the armament, that remains secret, and people don't want inspectors looking into it. And our general staffs would make as much trouble about that as the Russian general staff.
Do you have any reason to think that either at the summit conference next spring or in the negotiations, the 10-power negotiations in Geneva on disarmament, that we can get more than partial disarmament?
Oh, yes, I hope so, indeed.
In any foreseeable time, or are the obstacles too great?
I hope we can within a foreseeable time.
One other question on that. Do you think it's realistic for us to enter into disarmament negotiations that don't include the Chinese communists?
Well, quite frankly, no. I think we must have the Chinese in.
Do you see any possibility that within a foreseeable time the West will accept the Chinese in such negotiations?
Well, unless we do, I think we're in for a very bad time, because I think the Chinese, with 600 million people, with an annual draft of 12 million, with a big conventional armaments industry, which they built up in the last 10 years, and with the nuclear weapons which they're already making, they haven't got them yet, but they will have soon, may be a very great military danger to the world.
Well, one more question. It seems to me that you were saying that there are so many obstacles in the way that complete disarmament or plan for complete disarmament is virtually hopeless at this time.
I wouldn't admit that for a moment. On the contrary, I asked Khrushchev last year if a comprehensive disarmament program was put up with a lot of disarmament in it, would the Chinese come in? And he said with great confidence that they would. Now, I think every year we let it go by without bringing them into the negotiation. We take a chance on their standing out.
Since that time, hasn't it appeared that the Chinese and Russians are perhaps not so much in accord on these things as we might hope they were?
Well, 3 weeks after Khrushchev's speech in the General Assembly here, the Chinese government put out a statement specifically saying that they agreed with it and would accept it. That may be propaganda, but they said it.
Ms. Frederick.
Mr. Noel Baker, the United States is devoting 10% of its gross national product to military production, the Soviet Union 15%, most other countries similar proportions. Now, do you see any possibility of a fear of economic difficulties, if there is disarmament, as being one of the retarding efforts toward agreement on disarmament?
Well, I don't, Miss Frederick. After 1945, we demobilized 12 million men and women from the armed forces and from armament production. We didn't have a single man unemployed. Of course, now there isn't the demand for civil goods built up that there was then. We should have to have some planning. But among my constituents and the place I sit for in Parliament, Derby, are the Rolls-Royce Company, which make aero engines. They are fully prepared for total air disarmament and would be glad to have civil orders only.
But shouldn't there be some general overall parallel planning to cushion a shock from an economic shock from disarmament?
Oh, I agree with that, Ms. Frederick. And I think there are a lot of people worried about it, both management and men. And there ought to be planning, and it ought to start soon.
Let me ask you a general question. Do you believe that in this day, any nation would seriously consider going to war with the nuclear weapons that are now in existence?
I think it very likely that the governments we have now would, none of them, deliberately go to war. But I am very much frightened of an accident or of a minister making a wrong decision.
Well, if there isn't... if you feel that there would not be a deliberate act going to war, isn't a great deal of the emphasis on inspection and control more or less academic. Isn't this delay an academic delay rather than anything that's very tangible?
Oh, no, I think you would have to have the inspection to ensure that every country was loyally carrying out what it promised to do. I'm not a man who trusts the Russians at all costs. Don't believe that. I think until 1955, the Russians were extremely much to blame, and I wrote and spoke very severely against them.
Mr. Lindley.
Mr. Noel Baker, Mr. Khrushchev said to the United Nations General Assembly that if the West was not ready to commit itself to total disarmament, he revived the certain preliminary steps proposed for the Soviet Union. Control and inspection of certain countries in Western and Central Europe, a denuclearized zone in Central Europe, withdrawal of all foreign troops from the territories of European states, and liquidation of military bases, a non-aggression pact, an agreement on preventing surprise attack. With the possible exception of the last, every one of those seems to be directed toward dissolving the defensive alliances of the free world and expelling the American power, which balances the Soviet, from the Eurasian continent. Now, if he's serious about an approach to this, why does he keep bringing up that sort of proposal?
Well, I don't think he really believes in partial measures any more than I do. And I think a lot of people who've worked at this very hard don't believe in it. Our British government was putting up partial proposals of various kinds over the last 4 years. Mr. Selwyn Lloyd this year proposed a comprehensive plan.
But these proposals don't seem to me to be directed at disarmament. They're directed at ejecting American power from the Eurasian continent, not toward disarmament, and yet they're presented as steps toward disarmament.
Well, if you could get a demilitarized zone in Germany, it might have the same effect that the demilitarized zone along the Canadian United States frontier had. It's been the disarmament of that frontier which has prevented war between our two countries over the last 150 years. All our historians have agreed on that. The Swedes and Norwegians had a disarmed zone. But I agree broadly that those measures he proposed would not be accepted except as part of a general disarmament treaty. And the truth is that a general disarmament treaty is much easier to make than partial agreements. And another truth, if I may just add, the further you go, the simpler technically it becomes.
Well, Mr. Noel Baker, there's been no real danger of war just because Russian and Western troops were confronting each other in Europe, has there been? There's been no trouble there. We had trouble in Korea after the Russians withdrew and we withdrew, leaving a vacuum. And a war came out of that, didn't it?
Well, I think it was a great mistake to withdraw from Korea. I thought so at the time.
Yes.
And I supported, I was a member of the government which resisted. And I was with Ernest Bevin, the spokesman for our government, when we ratified the NATO pact in Parliament. But
then a demilitarized zone or withdrawal does not always promote the interests of peace.
Oh, well, that's not what I call a demilitarized zone. That was a unilateral disarmament of one side. I've never been for unilateral disarmament.
Mr. Spivak.
Mr. Noel Baker, public opinion in every country now has been overwhelmingly for disarmament and peace for a long, long time. Why do you think it's been so hard to get it?
Well, I think it is that no government has put forward detailed, practical proposals. In 1932, President Hoover put forward this proposal of which I've spoken, which suggested the exact measures of reduction which ought to be made. And we came very near success. I should like to see that done now. We've talked in general headline objectives.
Well, isn't it true, though, when you get down to everything, that the heart of this disarmament question today is the difficulty of tracing secret stocks and that we don't trust the Russians and the Russians don't trust us?
Well, Mr. Spivak, you've got to choose on that. Either you've got to take the risk of abolishing the stocks and abolishing the means of delivery and having a general reduction of armaments which makes aggressive war almost impossible, Or else you've got to allow the present arms race to go on with China and France and all sorts of other people coming in. And I think that's immensely dangerous.
You'd be willing to throw our weapons away and trust the Russians with the kind of inspection system that is possible in today's world?
The Russians would be similarly throwing their armaments away and destroying them under our inspection. And unless they did so, we should stop.
Miss Frederick.
Mr. Noel Baker, I believe you originally opposed locating the United Nations in New York. I wondered, in the United States. I wonder if you feel that it's been hampered in its activities because of its location.
Well, Miss Frederick, I was in favor of Geneva. I confess it frankly. And Mr. Adlai Stevenson beat me by one vote, 24 to 23. But I think it's worked extremely well in New York. But I note the fact that Geneva has been extremely useful to the United Nations, and when there are summit meetings, they go there.
Mr. Daniel.
Mr. Noel Baker, after working for peace and disarmament for 45 years, aren't you a little discouraged at this hour?
Well, I'm not likely to be what they call a facile optimist. But if you ask me the question, I say that facile defeatism is by far a graver sin.
Mr. Lindley.
Mr. Noel Baker, on the basis of your experience with the Soviet Union and its leaders, do you see any significant evolution in the nature of the system within the Soviet Union?
Oh, I think there have been very great evolutions. That would carry me too far. There's one more thing I want to say about the general armament question. Of course, disarmament is technically difficult, but most of the technical problems, armies, navies, and land forces, were all solved by the League of Nations conferences between the wars. There's Mr. Spivak's problem of the nuclear stock. And that requires the special measures which I've mentioned.
Mr. Noel Baker, I think on that note we'll have to close. I'm sorry to interrupt, but I see that our time is up. Thank you very much, Mr. Noel Baker, for being with us.
Monitor's thanks to the...